I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. With more than 30 weekly podcasts, HRN has something for every food lover. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network since 2009. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
Welcome to HRN On Tour, live from the HRN Podcast Lounge at the Art of Cheese Festival in Madison, Wisconsin. Hosted by Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin, this first-time event brings together cheesemakers, dairy farmers, mongers, chefs, and cheese lovers to celebrate Wisconsin's 180 years of cheesemaking excellence. Welcome to HRN Podcast Lounge, live at the Art of Cheese Festival. I'm Jessica. And I am here with Marissa Mullen.
Hello.
It's great to see you again. We talked not that long ago after the publication of your latest book, That Cheese Plate Wants to Party.
Woo!
So Marissa is an author. She also creates amazing cheese content for Instagram and other platforms. And she teaches. And you're here today at the Art of Cheese Festival because you are teaching a couple of sessions.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about what it is you're doing in these sessions? What can we expect?
Yes. So these sessions are all based on my method, Cheese by Numbers, which is a step-by-step process to building a cheese plate. And this method really breaks down building a cheese plate. I think a lot of the times you look on the internet and you see these elaborate boards and you don't know where to start. And what Cheese by Numbers does is separates everything into a six-step process. So that is cheese, meat, produce, crunch, dip, garnish. So with these classes, it's basically a build your own board cheese class where we'll start the class doing a little bit of cheese education, cheese tasting, kind of an overview of the cheeses we're featuring because, of course, that's the most important part of the cheese board. And then we will go through the method to build these boards. And it's so much fun because I feel like it reminds me of those paint and sip classes where the instructor's in the front of the room painting and you paint along, but every single board looks different. And it just really shows people's creativity. I've seen, you know, of course, a salami river, which is my signature, but then people do like salami pyramids and they go wild. And it's just such a fun way to, you know, express your creativity as well as learning about the actual items on the plate. I think, you know, with what I do, it's a balance between, you know, what is a good cheese pairing? What is this cheese? Like, how should we enjoy this cheese? How should we cut this cheese? How should we serve it? But also, how can we kind of zhuzh it up to make it look more like a centerpiece on a table versus just a plate of cheese?
We are fortunate that we are at a festival in a state like Wisconsin, which is, you know, pretty much a cheese capital. And also a capital for other items like that you mentioned that can go on these cheese boards. Tell us a little bit about what you're enjoying about Wisconsin and what would a Wisconsin cheese board look like for you?
Yes, well, being in Wisconsin, we're very spoiled with all of the incredible cheese. You know, with the class we're teaching today, we have five different cheeses and featuring one of my favorites, which is Pleasant Ridge Reserve Uplands Cheese. When I was here back in 2019 for a press trip, we got to go to the farm and just kind of see the root of where this cheese comes from and then seeing it on the plate. It's such a full circle experience. And I think that's what Wisconsin does so well is, you know, they appreciate their dairy farmers. They bring people into their world from the farm to the cheese to the plate. So Pleasant Ridge Reserve is great. We have amazing triple cream brie on the plate. We're doing Satori Bellavitano garlic and herb, which is one of my favorites. I think the cheese here, there's so much variety that you can really create so many different pairings with those items. But yeah, same with the jams here, with the crackers here. There's just so many amazing small batch producers that I'm really excited to just, you know, feature.
So why do you think the cheese plate and cheese boards have taken off so much? And you and I have talked about this before, but what is it about the visual or the creative act of creating one, like what is it that has made us all so gaga for playing with our food like this?
I think it's a few different things. You know, for me, making a cheese plate is all about kind of grounding into the present moment. I started my Instagram 10 years ago now, which is crazy, but it really started to take off when I was working in the music business. And having this act of creating a cheese board, you know, I'm in my apartment, there's natural light coming in, I'm playing music. It really was like a grounding opportunity for myself. But then making a cheese plate is an act of service for others as well. So, you know, you invite people over, you share this creation, you're proud of it, your friends see it, they're like, this is amazing, because it is so visually stimulating. So I do think that there is kind of a relationship between a personal relationship and then a social relationship around the plate itself. I also feel like with a cheese plate, it just gives you so many opportunities for tastes and for pairings. You know, if you have a bowl of guacamole, it's just guacamole, you know, which love guacamole. But with a cheese plate, there's endless possibilities for different flavor combinations, and there's opportunities for stories to be told around the cheese plate. Like, you know, if I put a Gruyere on a board and I tell a story about how I went to Switzerland, that can open up new conversations just around the plate itself. So there's just like, I think it's just such a connecting food item that people really do get excited about. And then of course, you know, the aesthetics of it in the age of the internet, people love to eat with their eyes first. And a cheese board is that perfect opportunity to create a work of art that you can then share online that other people can be inspired by. So it just, it's the perfect, it has so many elements that make it great.
Are there any pairing favorites that you want to share with us?
Ooh, well, since it's fall, I've been getting into some funky fall pairings. I really love blue cheese with maple syrup.
Ooh.
So it's kind of like, you know, you get that pungent blue cheese and then you go on the opposite side of the flavor wheel and get some sweet maple syrup in there. That's a great combination. I've been actually playing around with an idea of doing savory pancakes with like blue cheese crumble and maple syrup.
Huh.
We'll see. That might be coming soon. I feel like it
could
be
cool. I could see that.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I also love in the fall doing some sort of like Gouda with like, you know, the caramel nutty notes and pairing that with like a caramelized or like a candied pecan or caramelized onion jam. Just kind of diving into those like cozy fall pairings right now.
So we're at the Art of Cheese. We are in Madison, and we are steps away from the famous farmers market. And walking over here this morning, I had a chance to walk through there, and I saw so many peppers, hot peppers,
oh,
and hot sauce, and salsas. What about spicy as an element on a cheese board?
For sure. I think you can definitely play around with spice, because an item like cheese is very, you know, fatty, and it's buttery, and it kind of needs to be cut sometimes with a spice. You know, I think pepper jack is popular for a reason, because it has those spicy notes to it. So if you want to take it a step further, get a really nice cheddar, and you can pair that with like a, I really love tomatillo hot sauce, like green hot sauce, because it's not too spicy, but it has that really nice, has a nice flavor to it. So pairing, you know, cheese with salsa could be a fun opportunity. But then you think about, you know, Super Bowl food, and we're in football season, and everyone loves like blue cheese and hot sauce on chicken wings. So, you know, I think what's fun to do is take snacks like that and then kind of break them down to make them a little bit more artisanal on a cheese board. That's always a really fun thing that I love to do.
I know you've been traveling a lot. You have been promoting your latest book, That Cheese Plate Wants to Party, and then just personal travel as well. So now we're here again, like I said, in Madison, and there are people from all over the country here. Where do you see the connection or the intersection between travel and food, in particular cheese? Where are we going with this? Is this now the thing? Is this what we do now?
We'll travel for cheese. Yeah, I mean, I do think that for me personally, travel is always revolving around food. Everywhere I go, I seek out restaurants to try, cheese shops to go to. I was just in Paris, and I literally made this Google Maps that had every single cheese shop I can find. Because I think, you know, figuring out first of all, like an itinerary for your day, it is based around what you're eating, let's be real, and maybe like going to a museum or something. But trying cheese and trying food in these local communities really gives you a glimpse into what the community is all about. You know, like if you do come to a place like Madison, you can try all of these amazing cheeses and then learn about the farms that are just nearby. And I think that has an added element, you know, to create a lasting experience is you don't only have this food that you're trying, but you have this whole story now that you can bring back home and you can create a memory out of it. So I do think that traveling for cheese is something that I want to explore more as, you know, we can travel more now. I think after COVID, it took a little bit to get back into the swing of things. But now that I'm constantly on the go, I'm like, I don't really want to stop anytime soon. So,
what have been some of your favorite cheeses that you've got to try since you got into town?
Ooh, so the, let's see.
We were at the cheese ball last night.
I'm like racking my brain because I ate so much cheese last night.
So much cheese.
Oh my God.
And there were a lot of flavored cheeses.
There were. I really loved, I mean, the 15-year cheddar. I was just kind of standing there eating that nonstop. It was so good. Luna was amazing. Love that cheese. I tried, oh my gosh, I mean, the triple cream brie, it was sitting out for the perfect amount of time and it was just the best buttery consistency. The Colby Jack. That was a surprising one. The consistency was really interesting with that, like a little bit spongy. Oh my gosh. Obviously, love Pleasant Ridge Reserve.
Mm-hmm.
Love Hooks. Five-year cheddar. Dumbarton Blue. Incredible.
Dumbarton Blue.
There's just so many.
They're all incredible. There were so many.
Oh, you have to be kidding, because I love the play on words with that one. The triple...
I missed that one.
So it's the three milk. It's goat's milk, cow's milk, sheep's milk, blue cheese. And so it's this like blend of creamy, you know, different milks. And then you have the blue going through the center. And the name is just so funny. It's like a play on words.
Do you feel like there's something that you might take into your classes beyond, you know, from now on into the future about Wisconsin, something you might start, that you would want people to know about Wisconsin that maybe they didn't realize when it comes to cheese?
Definitely. And I do talk about Wisconsin in a lot of my classes because I feature a lot of Wisconsin cheese. I think having the experience that I got to have 4 years ago here, where we did a tour of a ton of different dairy farms, was such an eye-opening experience because, again, like I live in New York City and I don't really have access to farms very easily. And just being able to see that, you know, so many of these cheese companies pay such close attention to the treatment of their animals and what they're feeding them and the process of the cheese making. There's so much heart and soul that goes into it. And, you know, Wisconsin is so much more than the cheese hat. It's like there is such a beautiful artisanal quality to all of the cheese, a lot of the cheeses here. And it really, I think it represents, you know, an element of America that we really should celebrate because after going to Europe, you know, you see how much cheese is a part of everyday culture there. And here it's not so much because it's such a big country. But being in a place like this, it reminds me of being somewhere like in Europe because you do have that celebration of cheese and it is part of everyday life here, which I feel like should be promoted more across the country.
I agree. I have been really surprised by there's a diversity of styles of cheese being made in Wisconsin, but last night was interesting that I saw, like Gouda, for example, displayed in so many different styles, ages, flavors.
Yeah.
Then there was cheddar displayed in so many different styles, ages, and flavors. And some of them were large producers and some of them were smaller producers. And I, you know, thinking back again to like what the voice that you have and the platform that you have to be able to highlight a single cheese and then show all the different ways that you can diversify. So you do talk in one of the books, I think you do mention about how you could take like just focus on cheddar and you can do like, is the phrase vertical? Like a flight where you can like take a smoky cheddar and an aged cheddar and a young cheddar.
Yeah.
So what would you recommend like for a plate like that if you were just to focus on like Gouda? Mm-hmm. What would a cheese plate look like for you if you were to create one?
So with Gouda, you want to kind of dive into the ages and figure out what notes kind of come out with each age. So like a young Gouda, for example, it is mild, it's buttery. Something like that, you don't want to really overpower it because it doesn't have that punch of a super aged Gouda. So I would pair that with something like a dried apricot. When I think about cheese pairings, I love to think about what flavors do I kind of get out of the cheese itself, or like what kind of wine would I pair this with, and what are the flavor notes of that wine that I can take out into a produce item. So for like a young Gouda, I feel like a dried apricot is great because I would pair a young Gouda with like a white wine that maybe has like some light stone fruit flavors.
Yeah. I believe there was an ice cream last night made with Gouda and dried apricots.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
I gotta
try
that.
It was an ice cream.
Yum.
An ice cream with cheese in it. But
okay.
It worked.
Love that.
Especially because of that dried apricot.
Yeah. And then like, not a super aged Gouda, but let's say like mid-aged Gouda. That's where the flavors start to develop a little bit more, but it doesn't necessarily get that sweet caramel flavor yet.
Mm-hmm.
And something like that, since it is salty and fatty, I would pair that with a charcuterie of some sort. So maybe like a dry salami, or even prosciutto might be good with that. Because again, when you're talking about cheese pairings, you either want to do contrasting elements or similar elements. So doing something salty and fatty like a charcuterie is great with a salty, fatty Gouda. And then once we get to the super aged Gouda, you know, like the crumbly, caramelly, delicious, my favorite, I love with like the crystals in it.
Mm-hmm.
You can go in two directions. You know, if we're looking at this cheese board, we have dried apricots, we have salami. So I would like to add some sort of dip or jam on the plate. And something like this actually would be amazing with like a caramelized onion jam, because then you kind of dive into those savory pairings. If you want to kind of switch it and do a little bit more of a sweet side, dark chocolate and aged Gouda is a favorite of mine. That's where we kind of play with the contrasting elements of having, you know, a sweet dark chocolate that still has some bitterness to it with this like super caramelly nutty Gouda. There's so many options. It's so fun. I love to do plates like this, where I actually wrote an article for Food 52 with help from the late great Anne Saxelby. And it was a deep dive into the world of cheddar. So exploring all of the different types of cheddar, how is it different in flavor, how is it different in pairings, and it's true, you can take one cheese and just run with it. It's amazing.
I love that creative approach. I think there's always a way, right? So whatever's in your cheese drawer, there's a way you can create something visually exciting. And like you said, when you're sharing it with somebody, you've created it, you share it with somebody, it takes on its own meaning.
Yeah,
so
it's a relationship. And also, pairings are personal. So if you like it, that's great. It works for you. You can take suggestions from me. But a lot of the time, I think people get a little, tied up about pairings. And I'm like, it's not that deep. If you like it, do it.
That's right. But pairings are personal. And then they're also great to share. So
exactly.
Goes both ways. The cheese is self-care.
The cheese plate
as self-care. So I hope you enjoy the rest of the festival. I hope you get some time to go check out the farmer's market.
Oh, yes. I'm going to try. It looks
pretty
insane.
Amazing. And I look forward to having you on Cutting the Curd again. When you have your next book.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. Let's do it.
Well, thank you, Marissa Mullen, for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you, everyone, for joining us in the HRN Podcast Lounge at The Art of Cheese.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network. Roberta's was founded in Bushwick in 2008 and has become one of the most iconic restaurants in the country. HRN made its home inside of Roberta's in 2009, and together they have become part of the DIY fabric of the neighborhood. Roberta's is open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week and serves much more than just the famous wood-fired pizzas. Their team dreams up new salads, pastas, and sandwiches on the regular. Roberta's Tiki Bar is alive and well in the back garden, serving up frozen drinks in the summer and hot toddies in the winter. Stop by the bakery and takeout spot next door for fresh breads, sticky buns, and pizzas to go. But Roberta's also extends beyond Bushwick, with multiple locations in New York City, Long Island, and Los Angeles. You can also find their frozen pies in grocery stores around the country. The spirit of Roberta's, like Heritage Radio Network, is everywhere. Here's to many more years of pizza-powered radio. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
Welcome to the HRN Podcast Lounge, live at the Art of Cheese Festival. I'm H. Conley, and I'm here with Kat Craddock. Kat, could you introduce yourself?
Hi, yeah, thanks for having me, H. I'm Kat Craddock. I'm the editor-in-chief and CEO at Sever Magazine and a former cheesemonger. Very excited to be in Wisconsin today.
Oh, wow. Well, so for those who aren't aware, could you share like a little summary of the last year of Sever and what's been going on?
Yeah, it's been a big one. I've been with Sever for 8 years and have been through, you know, they're through a lot of different kind of changes in ownership and leadership. But earlier this year, kind of embarked on this new venture where I partnered with a good friend to buy it from Sever's former owner, and we've broken it out to be an entirely independent publication now, editor-led. And figuring out what a food publication that is also a small business is going to look like in moving into the future.
Yeah. Well, so what inspired you to take it independent?
I've kind of been thinking about it for years, you know, and I worked at independent cheese shops and restaurants a lot over the years. And, you know, when I was working at Sever, it seemed like a lot of the things about running a test kitchen and about running a publication were kind of restaurant adjacent, and always sort of wondered if it was something that could, you know, really thrive on its own. And when it seemed like there was an opportunity to do so, kind of wanted to give it a shot, you know, and I love the publication and grew up reading it and want to see it survive. And the food media is changing so quickly right now that I think that Sever being in the hands of somebody that loves it is the best chance it has for, you know, a long future ahead of itself.
Yeah. Well, what are the, like, you know, you don't have to get into too much detail, whatever you can share about, like, what are the changes that have come from taking it independent?
It's a lot of small business logistics right now, like figuring out what business insurance we need and how we're going to pay payroll and make sure that everyone has like healthcare and things like that. So I'm making sure that, you know, we continue to publish editorial content that is, you know, what we want to do is super important. The first few months is definitely about, you know, kind of ground, making sure that like we've got a stable ground underneath us so that the next like 6 months to a year, we can start rolling out the big exciting stuff that's ahead of us.
Yeah. You know, there are tons of food festivals that happen all the time. I'm curious, like, what brought you to this one specifically?
I'm often in Wisconsin. I'm a big fan of the cheese industry here. And when I heard, you know, what the programming is going to be, it seemed like a no-brainer and a perfect time of the year to come. So yeah. Definitely want to come next year. If it's happening next year, I'll definitely be here.
I think 2025.
Okay, great. Even better. Yeah, I'll put it in my calendar. So
what have you been up to this weekend?
So when we got in, we had a lovely all-cheese dinner at Harvey House, which is one of my favorite restaurants in town. Every time I've been here over the past couple of years, I go. And then yesterday I took an excursion into the Driftless region to visit Andy Hatch at Uplands, which he makes two of my favorite cheeses, not just American cheeses, and also kind of a tour and luncheon over at the Frank Lloyd Wright property out in the Driftless region as well.
Yeah. Well, and you've interviewed Andy before, right? Had you ever been to his farm? What was that like to like be there?
Yeah, I was there, gosh, maybe like 4 or 5 years ago now. I'm familiar with Andy and his operation and his cheeses, but they've developed the property a little bit more, and there's kind of this annex addition that they've added for like kind of a tasting space, which was cool to see. And I hadn't been this time of year either, so it was lovely to see the cows out on pasture in beautiful fall weather.
Yeah, well, so that was, like you said, it was this excursion that involved Uplands and visiting Frank Lloyd Wright's Taliesin. And so it was like this food and architecture combo. And I wonder, like, working in food media, I wonder if food ever gets a little stagnant and whether doing something like that, going on that kind of excursion that has this, like, looking at food from a specific angle, how that inspires you and, like, what you want to do at Sever.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like Sever has kind of always walked that line of food as culture, right? And talked a lot about, you know, the intersection of food and politics and art and music. And I think that it was a really nice fit for the way that I'm kind of always thinking about content for us. Obviously, the terroir of that particular part of the state really influenced both Frank Lloyd Wright's work as well as Andy Hatch's and Scott Merica's work making Pleasant Ridge Reserve. So I wouldn't say it was a huge surprise. Like, I'm kind of always thinking that way anyway, but it is kind of nice to immerse yourself in that that sort of experience.
Nice. Yeah, well, so you say you come to Wisconsin a lot. What makes Wisconsin a like continually interesting food environment to cover?
I mean, I was talking to somebody earlier today, and it's funny because, like, I live in New York City, right? And, like, you can eat at a different restaurant every single day at every single meal in New York City and, like, never run out. But, Wisconsin, Madison's obviously much smaller, but every time I've come, I've eaten at a different restaurant and had a really wonderful experience. And I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, the ingredients in the area, and it's obviously, like, an agricultural hub.
Well, so I'm curious, what has been have you had a highlight best cheese of the weekend?
Oh gosh, that's tough. I'm probably on like cheese, I don't know, like 75 of the day or something right now. I'm obviously an Andy Hatch super fan. Pleasant Ridge Reserve and Rush Creek Reserve are two of my favorites. Rush Creek Reserve is not ready yet this season, so I'm like waiting with bated breath for that. But it was cool to see them being produced.
Yeah, you got to see
he starts
the
working
bark.
On them right now. Yeah. So it was cool to see these cheeses that I'm definitely going to be ordering for like my holiday table coming up.
Yeah. Did you meet any cheesemakers that you hadn't encountered before that you're like, you know, maybe going to...
No, I don't think any new cheesemakers that I haven't met yet, but hopefully later on today, I think there's going to be a cheesemaker happy hour pretty soon.
Nice.
So.
Yeah. Well, did you like, yeah, I'm curious, like, is there anything new you've like learned this weekend? Any like, yeah.
Well, I just came from a really great panel on affinage in cheese with Liz Thorpe, who've been a fan of her writing for a long time. That was hosted on the top floor of the Museum of Contemporary Art. And I don't know, I'm sure your readers know what affinage is, but for anybody that doesn't, it's the art of, you know, aging cheese and transforming a young cheese into something beautiful and new. And there are some parts of the process that I'm familiar with, but it was really great to hear her perspective on the different ways that Wisconsin cheesemakers specifically are doing that.
Yeah. Well, so you said your original experience was as a monger, and I'm curious, like, what has it been like kind of coming back to cheese in this way now that you're more on the media end rather than the monger end?
I mean, you never really get out, right? I mean, I feel like cheese people are so great, and I've kind of always wanted to stay in that world a little bit. I was a cheesemonger in college and in culinary school, but then when I was working in restaurants as a bread baker and a pastry chef, I was still kind of curating cheese menus. And then when I moved over to media, I kept writing about cheese. So I don't really feel like I ever got out of it, and I don't really want to. I mean, I think that there's so much storytelling in cheese and wine also, that's kind of why I wanted to be in food media in the first place.
Yeah, wow. Well, so is there anything you can talk about coming up at Sevora?
Well, there's some big news coming soon, which I can't really get into right now. But yeah, in the next few months, we're going to be making some exciting announcements that I think people are going to be really are going to want to hear about. So please, like, sign up for our newsletter because there's going to be some big news in the next couple of months. I mean, in the immediate sense, I think, you know, we got away from doing a lot of travel content during the pandemic. Partly, nobody could go anywhere, and there was less interest in that. But I think that's a really important part of our brand. So one of our editors, Benjamin Kemper, has taken over as our travel editor, and we've been rolling out a lot more kind of service-driven, like, destination guides since June or so. We're doing two of those a month, domestic and international, and I think they're really great. And we're assigning those all to photographers and writers that are based in the places that we're covering. I think that, like, people traveling to the places that we're covering right now are going to get a lot of use out of those guides.
Yeah. What's important to you in having locals cover their local community rather than having the kind of, I feel like the old style media of like somebody goes somewhere and writes about their trip?
Yeah. I mean, there's something to be said for like parachuting a New York writer that you know and work with all the time into a place to cover it. Like, you know, the copy's going to come in really clean and it's going to be easy, right? But the people in the writers in the place know the place better, and it's more sustainable, and it is more affordable, and there, you know, the content is going to be better if you work with local talent. So I think it's very important for us moving forward that we're going to continue to reach out whenever we can to experts in the area, because anybody can like Google what's the 10 best restaurants in X place and write up an article from it. If we're going to be adding to the conversation at all, I think bringing that insider perspective about where to eat, where to drink, what are the most important dishes to try in a place. You know, no one's going to have a better understanding of that than writers living there.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. That's very exciting to hear. Is there anything cheesy coming to Sabor anytime soon?
Is there anything cheesy? I'm sure there is. Oh, man. I didn't prepare. well, I mean, the holidays are coming up. So definitely there is going to be some cheese moments. There will be some cheese moments in the gift guides. And we're going to have a lot of great cheese recipe content rolling out soon. Not sure what else, but I'm sure there will be. Yeah, we never really let too much time go by without, you know, some new cheese coverage.
Yeah, it's got to stay cheesy. Well, thank you so much. It's been so great to talk to you.
Yeah, thanks for having me, H. Yeah. This was fun.
Welcome to the HRN Podcast Lounge, live at the Art of Cheese Festival. I'm Jessica. I'm here with H, also from HRN. We are joined by two wonderful James Beard Award winners. We have the award-winning author, Laura Werlin, whose books were very instrumental in teaching me about cheese when I was starting out, and Belinda Chang, sommelier, with an incredible, incredible fingernails. I wish everyone could see, but they are here at the festival talking about wine and cheese, and you have wine and cheese on your nails.
Magnetic. World's first magnetic 3D nail art.
It's amazing.
Live on the radio.
Looks incredible. I want to start by asking you guys, we're at the end of the day, about your sessions, how'd they go? What was the experience like today?
Well, I discovered that Belinda and I are like the best pairing in the world.
Oh my God. We were going to ask you about the best pairing of the weekend, but it's you two.
But it's us. It's like sometimes, you know, we brought cheese and wine to a new level in a human form in terms of a really good pairing, because you never know. You know, we've never worked together before, and both of us, I'm sure, I know I and I'm sure you, have been paired, as it were, with different partners over the years to do what we do. And you hope it's going to work, but you know chemistry is chemistry, and
just like a cheese and wine pairing.
Yes,
you hope it's going to work. And
that's
you just
exactly
don't
right.
Really know in the moment.
That's right.
And you know the elements, but that it isn't until you put them together that you can find out. And so I think we discovered that we work really well together, and because we have similar sensibilities and similar sort of expertises in our fields.
We love to put stomp grapes together in old world countries.
Yes.
Maybe this goes
discovered
on
a lot.
The road.
Well, so for people who couldn't make it to your workshop, to your pairing class, what could you give us like a brief Cliff's Notes of what you guys were doing?
Yeah, I think it's so fun to find all the ways to experience foods that you love, right? You know, maybe sometimes cheese is a little snack for you in the afternoon. Maybe sometimes it's a part of the appetizer assortment that you serve at a dinner party. But throughout all of that, you need to find the right beverage, and you know, if you're going to ask me, I'm always going to say that there's a wine appropriate answer to that. So it was really fun to explore six different cheeses, some which were brand new discoveries, right, for both of us, and also to find ways to find the best match. I think it's actually much more difficult to find a perfect pairing for one cheese than it is to just serve some things that you really like, some wines you really like with some cheeses that you really like. And I think we got really kind of like granular and into the details for how to find like a revelatory moment when you put a Wisconsin cheese and a wine together. And I think we found a couple today with all of our...
We did. And even the ones that we kind of expected might work. We found some that were actually maybe even better than that.
Because that's surprises.
Yeah.
Well, it is. I mean, that's the thing. You know, as we all know, cheese and wine are both agricultural products, and they change from vintage to vintage in terms of wine and cheese, at the very, you know, artisan level, maybe batch to batch. And so you never know. It's always a little bit of a mystery as to whether they're going to work, but you know, you when you've done it a while, you have some sense of whether it will or not. So today, what we did was we took these cheeses. Belinda chose some wines, not based on having tasted the cheeses, but based on the styles of cheeses, and put them together. So what makes it fun also is that it's a discovery for us too, because we stood there and
naked.
Tried.
We were naked.
We were professionally naked.
We were professionally naked.
and tasted along with the people that attended. And made the discoveries together, and that's part of I think any good seminar is having is making those discoveries together,
having a little drama, a little uncertainty. Would they or would they not fail?
Yeah, and if they fail, then you just say, well, it's not our fault. And if they're great, it's our fault.
It's our fault. Mm-hmm. So out of the six pairings, can you give us each of you your favorite pairing?
Well, I'll start with saying, so we did six different styles of wine, kind of like you would in a tasting menu in a restaurant. You know, a lot of times we start with sparkling or a glass of champagne, so we did that. And then we did two different whites, two reds, and we also did a port wine, which a lot of people are like, port and cheese, duh, that's absolutely what you always do. But we also wanted to do some things that were surprising, like we had the Irie Pinot Gris from Willamette Valley, which is an old vines Pinot Gris, and I think a really iconic white wine that not a lot of people think of for a cheese pairing. So as we went through with all the wines, we did, I think, some things which was so fun to do with Laura because she knows so much about the cheeses and how they interact. We got so much storytelling in there, too. But I think there were surprises, right? Like, I sort of was like, the port's going to be great with everything. But I think in some cases we found, I thought the Pinot Gris with the blue was really delicious. A really great salty sort of young blue with the Pinot Gris from Willamette Valley. I mean, I'm taking that home. You know, I'm now going to have case stacks of the Irie Pinot Gris at home with the little blue cheese.
Yeah, so the blue that that Belinda's referring to is called Breezy Blue, made by Kingston Creamery, and here in Wisconsin, obviously. And it was very often a blue can overtake almost any wine, but this kind of classic Pinot Gris from Oregon, with that, you had the fruit and the texture from the wine that went really nicely with this blue that's a mixed milk blue. It's not just cow's milk. And it was just a really nice textural and flavor pairing. And then another one that was my favorite, I think, there's a new to me cheese here in Wisconsin called Luna, made by Hill Valley Dairy. And it's kind of a Gouda meets Alpine style cheese.
Oh, it was so good.
And with this kind of, I guess it's an old vine, Zinfandel from Hartford Court.
River Valley.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sonoma Zinfandel.
Right. Sonoma near the coast, sort of. That combination was really nice because other kinds of Zins can be really, really big and powerful, and it would have and they overtake almost everything. But in this case, they were both. It was dialed back, and it was a really nice combination.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was all a discovery. I think what's really fun, too, is where we had six wines and six cheeses that we designed to go together and to talk about and discuss, but it was also really fun to just explore and try everything with everything. As Laura has, too, I've written so many wine pairing notes for the various celebrity chefs I've worked for, and they'll give you a recipe, and they'll say, this is what it tastes like, but you never really know until you put it in front of you and try to get every little micro herb on the plate together to make the perfect bite and then try the wine itself. So it's great fun to do this with everybody who is here for Art of Cheese.
Yeah. Did you hit any clashes? Were there any, were you like, these don't play, keep them apart?
Yeah. Yeah, we did. Well, I think, you know, the common maybe misconception is that red wine is the right wine to do with cheeses because it happens at the end of the meal. You maybe like ordered a big California Cabernet or something and you have a little bit left after you finish your entree. And commonly the reflex is to ask for some cheese to finish your wine. And I think, you know, the revelation maybe for some of the people we were with today is like, maybe that's not the right answer. Because we did have in one session a Brunello di Montalcino from Fattoria Barbie, which is a really amazing estate for Brunello. And then we also had a Super Tuscan, blend of Cabernet and Merlot and Sangiovese, and that was not the most flexible wine with all of the cheeses. So I hope that everybody might reach for something a little different now moving forward when you're home and you're opening the refrigerator and opening the drawer and thinking like, okay, I've got these cheeses, what am I going to open to go along with them?
And, you know, so, and I talked to the group about that too, because they're kind of three goals you're trying, I mean, three, not goals, three sort of levels of pairing. One is what I call Switzerland, where it's sort of neutral.
And, I love this,
and,
yeah.
And they play well, the cheese and the wine play well in the sandbox together, but they're not going to rock your world. But that's, honestly, that's most pairings. Then you get to what I call the Titanic, which we all know did not end well. So you have
not
the cheese.
Cute.
Yeah. You have the cheese and you have the wine, and together, yeah, you wish you hadn't. And then the opposite end of that is what I call nirvana, where you have the cheese and you have the wine, and together the angels descend. And so the goal is to get there. But it, as I said to the group today, unlike in life, I mean, just like in life, nirvana doesn't happen all the time. We just aspire.
It doesn't always smell like teen spirit.
Yeah, exactly. So, so that's really what you're looking for when it comes to pairings. And we had some nirvanas today.
Yeah,
we did not have any Titanics.
But I also love that people had different favorites. You know, I think everybody's palate is different, and it's attenuated in a different way. And it's like where you grow up or where you live or what the pH of your water is. So I think things can be all things to all people in this, like, pairing journey or this fun food and wine journey, right? You know, it just, if you love it, you love it. No one's going to say you're wrong.
Yeah.
Unless you're wrong. I won't say it.
So I'm sure you drink a lot of wines in your job.
What
and
about
life,
me tells
and
you like, that?
And, it's not the nails. It's
okay.
Not the nails.
It's not the nails.
And I know that you also, if you've worked in the cheese industry for a long time, you've tasted a lot of cheeses from a lot of places. But you did say that there was something new for you today, that there was a new cheese. I'm wondering, you know, we're here at the Art of Cheese Festival. Wisconsin is showcasing, you know, some of their great cheeses. Of course, they can't showcase all of them. I heard earlier today there's 600 cheeses that they, at least that have been counted, in the state of Wisconsin. So have there been some new things this weekend that you hadn't tried before? Like what cheeses have excited you this weekend that maybe are new to you?
We didn't talk about it in our session, but I have a new obsession with Limburger.
Oh, yeah.
And
an oldie but a goodie.
We were with Professor Dean at the Center for Dairy Research. We were together, in the Cheese Making 101 class, which everybody needs to take. I mean, it was awesome. I learned so much. And I also learned that everything becomes Limburger. So now I just think Limburger is life, and I want to have Limburger with Funyuns, and I want to have it in my life all the time. You know, because I think a lot of us were obsessed with, you know, sort of the stinky cheese cart cheeses that we would see all the time, some of the like very classic French items. But you know, it was just, it was like so fun. I, you know, of course we think about the cheddars and we think about some of the more famous things like the Uplands, the Pleasant Ridge Reserve, which we all really love and have seen in our fancy restaurant cheese carts. But I mean, there's so much cool stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I was really impressed with Schroederkäse. So Brian Schroeder is making soft ripened cheeses, meaning like brie style cheeses, here in Wisconsin. And that's a category of cheese that really has not been developed in the dairy state here. And so he makes a couple of triple cremes. One has edible vegetable ash and the other doesn't. And I learned today that he is going to be making some other kinds of soft ripened cheeses with, like, I think it was either cranberry or cherry or something like that. And kind of seasonal and very visually appealing. And when you think about it, very often people make baked brie and they put, you know, a jam on it of some kind. So it's sort of going to be all of that without having to bake it. It's all going to be in one bite. But most of all, I sort of like just the pure straight cheeses. And so the, you know, the triple creme without flavorings or whatever, I really, really think he's nailed. And I'm excited to see, again, that category here in Wisconsin because it didn't exist before.
Very true. And you kind of brought up flavored cheeses.
Yeah.
There's a lot of flavored cheeses in Wisconsin. How do you pair wine with a flavored cheese?
Should I share my secret?
Question I've had.
This was the world debut of my big secret to pairing cheese and wine. It's that I think about wine as a basket, and you fill the basket with some of the aromas and flavors. So a Chenin Blanc or a Vouvray, you know, you always think of like tart green apples and pears and all the different fruits and maybe some brown spices and maybe a little honey. So if you would take all those accoutrements and pair that with a cheese, I feel like you've got the right wine. You're going to pair it with Chenin Blanc or Vouvray. So if you think about a wine like a Shiraz, it's all like blueberry jam and dark fruits, and you have a cheese that you love with that kind of dark berry jam, you've got a pairing right there. Add Shiraz like you would the jam. So that's how I like to do it.
And I think when it comes to a flavor, to certain flavored cheeses like, you know, habanero, cheddar or whatever it is.
Dill Havarti.
Yeah. Dill Havarti is a little different. When it comes to the spicy ones, I say pair it with beer.
Oh.
Forget wine.
La, 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 la. Not listening.
This is sacrilege.
Yeah. Well, not in Wisconsin, last I checked. I think there's a brewery or two here, isn't there? So I'm pretty sure you could find a beer to go with those spicy cheeses. And I think that's a better match than wine, because spice and wine are pretty hard to match.
Very hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. You could try a little Riesling Spätlese, maybe. Throw some sugar at it. That's a common way to deal with things that are very hot when you have this wine paradigm, or like demi-sec sparkling wine or champagne. Mm-hmm.
Well, speaking of sparkling wine or champagne, I mean, I feel like he handed that right to me. But we have, well, first, can you tell us what this bottle is?
So I'm a huge fan of the classics when it comes to the cheese styles, and we've discovered so many of them here in Wisconsin. But, you know, when it comes to champagne, I think something like 60% of the champagne in the world is made by this Maison, Chateau Moët et Chandon. So this is Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, Pinot Meunier. And what is more fun than a very big bottle of champagne after a long day of cheese talking and cheese tasting and cheese speaking? So I brought a fun magnum of it to celebrate what's happening here in Madison, Wisconsin.
And a gold magnum.
A gold magnum that is illuminated.
Oh, I was going to say, it's not just any magnum. This thing lights up, it dances, it sings.
Yeah.
It does all kinds of stuff. And there happens to be good juice in the bottle, or so I'm told. I wouldn't know.
All right. So, you know, there has to be champagne cork safety at all times, just like you want to be very careful with your cheese knives. So you turn the little spinny thing 6 times, and you want to be very careful, push and pull. And if you do it right, we should get a little whisper. Like the crunch in the cheese, you want the whisper with the champagne.
You mean it's like kind of gauche to have it go pop, like really loud pop?
I mean, you know, there's all the vibes. Sometimes the pop brings on the party and makes it very festive. And then my favorite sound is the glug, glug, glug.
In a plastic cup. That's awesome.
I don't know if we're going to capture it here, but I'll tell you what, it's a beautiful sound.
That whisper was so impressive. I'm like the person in the corner with my back turned with the towel wrapped around the cork, like hoping that I don't break a window or something.
Or pop out your eye, heaven forbid.
But, you know, I mean, beer is one thing. Champagne, though.
Yes. The other night, we were out for dinner here in Madison, and I had a glass of wine from Wisconsin.
Oh, fun!
So
how was it?
It actually was very tasty. It was a white wine, and it was fruity. The description in the menu was that it had notes of mango, and I think it did a bit. It was a little juicy tropical, but
was it made from mango?
I know. I'm wondering, like, what...
They have a lot of fruit wines here, although mango, I don't think, is one of them.
Yeah.
But what is the Wisconsin, like, wine scene? Are we seeing wines being made in the Midwest?
The cool thing is all 50 states have wineries. Every single one has at least one, and there's an incredible legacy of making wine in, like, Missouri and places that might be surprising to most people. But not all of those wines are grape wines. You can use all the fruits, just like with cheese. It's a fermentation process, and you take one thing, and in the case of wine, sugar, and turn it into CO2 and alcohol. And so, you know, you make delicious beverages and wines, I'm doing air quotes right now, wines from things other than grapes. But they're all kinds of delicious things. And I think those are good things for cheese as well. I had, as I said, a great rhubarb wine from here in Wisconsin, which I think has a cheese wow. buddy. We just have to find it.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Well, is it weird to say that I feel like this champagne almost smells a little cheesy? Like 100%. A little bit like an Alpine. Like
not weird at all.
And like yeasty, yeah, toasty.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like I'm feeling like it's got like cheese and crackers in this glass of champagne.
1,000%.
It's no accident that bread and cheese go together.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And in the case of champagne, you've got it all.
Yeah.
And it's neither bread nor cheese.
Yeah. We just need a little bit of that beautiful, soft, ripened triple cream.
Yes. The Schroeder Kazaa.
The Schroeder Kazaa.
Oh, yeah. That was champagne was delicious.
Yeah. That's what's kind of cool about being here is every time I visit Wisconsin, which isn't all that often, but every time I do discover new cheeses. And more than that, I discover more diversity within the cheese-making realm. Mm. This is not, you know, Wisconsin is not just for cheddar anymore. Not that it ever was, but I think people didn't know the diversity of cheeses that are made here. And that's kind of what's impressed me. And also how very small cheesemakers are making kind of a big impact here. And we had an example of that, this cheese called Luna from Hill Valley Dairy. He makes cheese just once a week. The milk is collected. Most of it is sold off as fluid milk. But on Sunday, they collect the milk. On Monday, they make the cheese. And this Luna is kind of a Gouda meets Alpine style. And it's a beautiful burnished orange color. And it's aged many months, I think 9 to at least, or maybe more than that, maybe a year. And it's got so much going on. It kind of tastes like an aged Gouda, meaning like these little bit caramel, like burnt caramel kinds of flavors. But then the Alpine, which is sort of toasted nut kinds of characteristics all together. And that it's a very meaty, savory cheese that goes a long way, a little bit. Yeah. Goes a long way. And it went really nicely with the Zinfandel.
It was really delightful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I used to make a cheddar Alpine cheese. So
cool.
I think that Alpine as a flavor in other cheeses, it's like it adds so much of the brothy, nutty notes, like you said, that I think like...
So much umami, too.
Yeah, I think, you know, there is a lot to be said for the like purity of certain, like the... styles and keeping them how they are, but I also think we've been talking about a lot of the innovation that we've been hearing about here, and I think the mixing of cultures, mixing of styles is really exciting. And
I would say both meanings of the word culture, too.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
But I'm pumped. Nice.
I mean, we talked to Huma, who makes a tandoori gouda that like is very
exciting.
We had
that at the cheese ball. It was so good.
Yeah. Again, maybe a beer cheese.
Yeah. Right.
No, I'm going to find a wine. Please report back.
What you're referring to, though, is true here in Wisconsin, and it's true in America. American cheeses are diversifying based on, partly, on the cultures that are here in America. You want to talk tandoori cheese, you know, things like that that make a lot of sense. You know, they're not ones that are just kind of silly, just for its own sake to add, oh, gee, you know, let's add curry to a cheese or whatever it might be. And it's really fun to see. I mean, it's part of cuisine. We are seeing all kinds of diverse cuisine around American restaurants and things. So, of course, cheese would follow suit. In any culture where cheese is already part of it, you know, I mean, I'm sure we're seeing, I don't know, I haven't seen it, but there's probably like lemongrass and Thai chili pepper cheese somewhere. And if there isn't, there will be. Yeah. But that's also part of America, even if it isn't part of Thai traditional cuisine with cheese, you know. But,
Yeah.
And that's what's exciting, partly.
I think it's a fun way, even though we're here in Madison and we're really experiencing the terroir of Madison through these, like, cheeses of Wisconsin, we're also traveling. I mean, that's what always has drawn me to wine. Like, even if you can't be in Friuli, you can enjoy a Friulian Pinot Grigio or a wine from that region and really feel like you're there. And I think the same thing with the cheeses. So it's fun. As you're talking about these Alpine-style cheeses, I want to break out into song and sing something from The Sound of Music and feel like I'm twirling around in a field, munching on some Alpine-style cheese and drinking some, like, you know, high-elevation white wines.
Mm, that's why I like working with you so much, because you're just like Julie Andrews.
I've got a song, a dance, and a twirly dress for every moment.
I just want you to know, Sound of Music, this is probably going to, you're going to go, wah, 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 but that was my all-time favorite
Come
film.
Come on, see? And you and me, eye to eye.
Yeah, well, Laura and Belinda, I think the two of you definitely have a good thing going here. I think you should do this at festivals all over the country.
And a touring really, show.
Yes. Right? And yes. Thank you for sharing with us some of your impressions of Wisconsin cheese and the cheese and wine pairings, the event today, and let's have a toast.
We have a little toast.
Thank you for
Cheers.
Joining us in the
clink,
HRN
clink.
Podcast
chin,
lounge.
Chin.
Thank you for inviting
Thank
us
you
to
for
be part
having
of it.
Us.
There's nothing better than Heritage Radio Network,
oh,
really. You guys
we
are the
love
real
you.
Deal.
We
and no,
that.
It's really, it kind of is a perfect pair between that and artisan cheese. It really is. It's all of the same piece. So thanks for having us on.
Beautiful.
Thank you,
Thank you
so much.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us at the Art of Cheese Festival, brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese and Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin.
This show is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hey everybody, I'm Nick Latham.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.